Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to The Bigger Picture with my co-host, Michael Rakia. Welcome to the show, Michael. It feels like it's been a year since you and I talked.
It really does, yes. Time has gone quickly, but slowly for us.
I know. It's just that there's so much stuff happening every day. It's almost hard to keep track.
Absolutely. It's a mad world.
Remember that old movie? It's a mad world.
One of my favorites.
Yeah. Me too.
The only movie in which somebody does actually kick the bucket.
But that's kind of funny because my sister told me that when she was sitting by my father's bedside when he was dying, I guess one of the machines he was connected to while he was sleeping went off. It started buzzing. And he woke up and he looked at my sister and he said, "Paul, what happened?" He said, "Did I kick the bucket?" And my sister said, to him, "Yeah, and I'm an angel."
Oh, dear. Sense of humor to the end.
To the end. That's how my family is. Sense of humor and a huge appetite. Let's not leave that out. Only Italians can gain weight on the way to the grave.
Oh, dear.
But that's the way we are. Anyway, Michael, I had a couple of questions from some listeners, and I got a whole bunch of other topics I wanted to discuss with you, but I want to get to these questions first. And one of them deals with the law of attraction.
Yes.
And his question, it's two parts, so I'll give you the first part. Is the law of attraction what we, as angelic beings, created as a new or better way of creating and experiencing life that eventually caused the fall?
We have this natural attraction, don't we? What we believe to be true, we pull towards ourselves, because that's how we operate as the angelic beings we just mentioned. Where the fall was concerned, we decided that we knew a better way of creating matter. We knew a better way. And we were advised not to do it, and we said we were going to do it anyway because it would help to glorify God within us and God outside of ourselves. And we got it wrong, so we entrapped ourselves within this illusion that we find ourselves in. So the law of attraction, I don't know how that came to play within the fall. It's obviously still with us, but the law of attraction means that whatever we believe to be true, whatever our dominant thoughts are, we attract more of the same. And the instant we think of anything, we begin to draw it towards ourselves. Have you ever noticed that you might have a stray thought about something, some aspect of life, and then you hear that aspect of life mentioned on the television, you see it in the newspaper that same day, somebody talks to you about it in passing? It's because thoughts cluster together as soon as we've thought of them. We pull towards ourselves similar thoughts. But that's an interesting prospect, because it means that if we want to, we can attract good things to ourselves. We can attract good things to this world, and we can attract good things to life. And that's why it's so important in Joseph's books to send out light and to attract light and to pull together light workers, so we become a force for good and we eventually undo the effects of the fall.
Right. Okay. So would you say that the law of attraction is something that we created after the fall?
No, I think it's part of our inherent angelic makeup.
Okay.
I think it's a mechanism by which we pull to ourselves out of the soup of possibility around ourselves that which we wish to create. In other words, we have this magnetic effect on the matter around us in order that we can give form to whatever we want to give form to. Of course, we don't do that consciously now. We do that subconsciously. But nevertheless, it's still there as a law.
Right. Okay, well, part two then, and he wants to know what all three of us, me, you, and Joseph, thinks about this, based on the understanding of the law of attraction. He said, what would you recommend as a way to release resistance to a subject so we could focus positively and be in a state of allowing relative to any subject, including death? Now, I think what he's asking is, how do we get out of our own way?
Right. Okay, I think how we get out of our own way is to practice bringing to ourselves and to the world that which is better than the things that we attract at the moment. We have to discipline our minds, and we have to discipline our minds through our hearts. Again, we have to go in meditation, we have to slow down, we have to become quiet, we have to move our consciousness from the head mind down to the heart mind. And then we have to see from the heart mind that which we want for the world spiritually and for ourselves. And as a result of that, we will begin to see that we attract the circumstances and the situations that we want to see unfolding around us. And that will give us the strength and the confidence to then look at the world and say, well, I can change myself. I can bring to myself the things that I want, better things, spiritual things. Right. This must work on a worldwide basis too. So it's practice. In getting ourselves out of the way, what we're really getting out of the way of is the head mind. That's the great stumbling block.
Right.
We don't want to get ourselves out of the way because at core we are angelic beings and we are beautiful creative beings and we have beautiful creative powers and beautiful creative thoughts. What we want to get out of the way is the head mind that is linked into the field of human consciousness. And that head mind brings so many troubles to us, doesn't it?
Right.
It brings us the belief in illness. It brings us the belief in there being a violent world. It brings us the belief in suffering. It brings us dependence upon society. And those are all the things that we have to unlearn. And we unlearn them by going regularly, daily, whenever we can, in meditation to the heart center, to bypass the head, to bypass the physical mind. And then eventually, in visiting the heart center, the heart mind daily, we infuse the head mind with those heart mind sensibilities. And we transform the head mind, and we find that our journey through life is not as difficult as it was before we practiced this technique.
Well said. You know, usually when people ask me something similar to this, because I think it's human nature when we live in a planet of fear, to think the worst and to have, you know, a lot of negativity. And I don't know how many times a day I must say this to people in conversations. I always tell them, you know, be careful what you say. It's number one, it's bad enough to think it. I said, but once you say it and you add sound vibration, of course, everything is sound and energy in the universe. You're going to draw it to yourself. So one of the suggestions I give people is when they start thinking in a negative way or about to say something negative, and I use it all the time, I'll just say out loud, I cancel that thought. And I just move on to something else. And I mean, that's very effective. It sounds kind of silly and easy, but just say, I cancel that thought. And, you know, there are a lot of ways of flipping that switch from negative to positive in your head, but you have to work on it. You have to be aware of the words you use. So how important are words, Michael?
Absolutely. As you say, thoughts and then words begin to solidify those thoughts. It's interesting where you're saying cancel that thought. That's a great technique. Tony, who is, of course, a member of the Band of Light, of the four of us, always says that he doesn't do anger. And bless him, he doesn't. He doesn't do anger. He's magnificent at it. And over the last few years, I mean, I come from an Italian background like you, Maria. And so we sort of have a hardwired hot temper built into us as youngsters. But I don't do anger now. And if I find myself becoming anger, I take time out from that anger. And I say, no, step back from that. And I become calm and I become quiet and I step away from it and diffuse it. So we can, as you say, cancel those thoughts, and we can cancel those angry thoughts too. And then we find that we react differently to every situation, and we have access, because we're not angry, because we're not violent, because we're not fearful, to inspiration more. And the promptings of the heart mind in creating a better society and a world for ourselves and for everyone else here.
Right. Now, Joseph speaks in many different ways in his books about when you lift yourself up, you lift up others at the same time. Like, it's an energy shift for everyone. Even the people that appear to be insane get a little boost. Is that correct? Is that the right way of understanding what he writes?
Yes. And what he's saying is we are all, at core, part of the same thing. We're all part of divinity. We're all part of whatever we believe God to be. However we visualize God, we are all part of that force, that movement. And we cannot disentangle ourselves from everyone else because we are part of everyone else. So as we elevate ourselves through right thinking, through light thinking, we inevitably raise up everyone in terms we can understand beneath us. By that, I mean not at that level of vibration yet. It is inevitable. So as we connect in light workers one to another, and as we elevate the world and elevate ourselves as a group, we pull up the people who, relatively speaking, are below us into a more rarefied state of vibration and into a state where they are fed via the heart mind and can begin to consider their way of life in a different way. Can begin to think, wait a minute, I shouldn't be acting in this way.
Right.
I shouldn't be violent. I shouldn't be angry. I shouldn't be so selfish. We are creating, by giving out light, an atmosphere within which others can grow. It's like feeding a pilot light. It's like sticking a firelighter into a fire. Everything catches a light eventually. And so we have to keep on keeping on giving out the light, because no light work is ever wasted. And we do draw everyone up. And the reason we draw everyone up is because we can't help but draw everyone up, because we're part of the same thing.
Right. Well, you know, besides, and believe me, I've been using that. I cancel that thought. I say it in public, Michael. You know, about, I want to say maybe 12 years ago, I had eye surgery to reconstruct an eyelid that another doctor had mistakenly whacked off. And as a result, when I went to the doctor who did the surgery, I said to him when he was doing a recheck, I said, you know, I haven't had to use my reading glasses since the surgery. And he said to me, that's only temporary. It's probably because your eye is swollen, this and that. Immediately while he was saying that, I looked at him and said out loud, I cancel that thought. This is going to be permanent. Now, he may have thought I was crazy for saying that right to his face, but it's been 12 years and I still don't need reading glasses. So, you know, what you put out is most of the time what you're going to get back.
And we are perfect beings at heart. Again, that phrase, at heart. We cancel, unfortunately, our view of wellness, our view of health, because we're told all the time by society, by advertising, by the pharmaceutical companies, by doctors, by the medical profession, that we are going worse.
Right.
And we buy into that. We invest in that because there is such a wealth of information, negative information, being wrapped around us from the minute we're born to the minute we pass on. But it doesn't have to be that way. My spiritual teacher, Joan, who I always mention because she was such a great influence on me, was born with one leg shorter than the other. And at the end of her life, both legs were the same length. She got angina and said to the doctor, I don't want drugs. Just tell me if it's angina and I will deal with it. And there were various other symptoms that she kept at bay by believing that they couldn't possibly take a hold of her. And that's the attitude we need to be healthier. I'm not suggesting that you ring up your doctor and say, I'm not going to see you anymore.
Right.
What I am suggesting is that we balance that by also believing and seeing ourselves to be the perfect beings that we really are. We don't have to travel through this life suffering. We can be healthy, but we have to believe in it, we have to reinforce it, and as those other thoughts come, as you quite rightly say, Maria, we have to cancel those thoughts constantly. But it becomes easier as we do that. Day after day, week after week, we build it into ourselves.
Right.
And we do enjoy greater health as a result of doing so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also think that another answer to, you know, another part answer to the question asked was it might make it easier for people if they stay in a state of gratitude, if they're actually thankful and stay in, you know, in a state, like I said, of gratitude.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I find that a lot of people don't receive what they want because they truly don't believe they deserve it.
Yes. It's a surface. It's an homage, an homage on the surface to God and say, yeah, I've got it. And then we look and say, have you given it to me yet, God? Which implies that we haven't got it in the first place. As you quite rightly say, gratitude is so important. Thank you, Father, I am well. Thank you, Father, I am at peace. Thank you, Father, I can see the path. Which then builds that belief that it's already happened, rather than keeping it at bay by saying, can you do something, Father?
Right.
Can you do something tomorrow? Gratitude says, you've already done it, Father. It's already part of me. We accept it, we draw it towards ourselves, and the answers and the solutions present themselves.
Right. Well, I always recommend that people take the attitude, because what I find is a lot of times people aren't so afraid of failing. They're more afraid of succeeding, even when it comes to something they desire. And I tell them, you know, whatever good happens to you during the day, even if somebody at work just buys you a cup of coffee, just say out loud, thank you. I deserve this and more. And, you know, it may sound crazy to some people, but it really isn't, because it convinces your brain, which eventually gets to your, to connect to what your heart already knows, is that you do deserve it. You know, abundance is truly our birthright, but I think we've forgotten that.
Yes, yes. And we look at God, and the big question is God poor?
Right.
Of course he isn't.
Right.
Is God abundant? Of course he is.
Right.
He brings forth from nothing, everything. From nothing, everything. And we are made in his image. We are part of him. We are mini-gods, if you like. We are angelic beings. And so, as he operates, so do we. We're made in God's image, not in the way we look, but in the way that we operate.
Right.
So we have to believe, as you say, in that abundance.
Mm-hmm.
We have a planet that is totally abundant. But because we believe in like, we have half of the human race storing and hoarding and believing that the other half is trying to get power from them. When in fact we should be saying, I have everything I need today, Father. Thank you, Father. And then just set off into the day without another care in the world. And everything that day will be presented to us.
Right. Well, that was going to be my next question. In From Here to Infinity, there's a statement that says the true you and God are the same. Now, I know that's hard for people to wrap their minds around. Some people would say that's a thought only heretics have. But when you really realize that the true you and God are the same, it makes a big difference. So how can you get people to really understand that? You know, you hear them teaching, you know, for how many decades, Michael, you know, we're all one. But people still have a hard time understanding that.
It's down to what you've just been saying about not believing in abundance and in believing, having to believe that you are worthy of something, deserving of something. We have, as you've said, for decades, for hundreds of years, been told that we are not worthy.
Mm-hmm.
We are not worthy. We've been told for hundreds of years that the only way to God is through someone else interceding for us. We have to rediscover the God within. And the only way we can do anything like that is by taking time to become still. And again, it's down to meditation and self-exploration. no one outside of ourselves is ever going to provide proof that we and God are the same. That is something that comes from exploring from within in the safety of God's love and asking for protection as we do so. Exploring from within what we are, exploring our potential. And that feeling of oneness, that knowing of oneness, comes at some stage during our meditations. It's not something that can be described by words or by the head mind. It is something that is a knowing from the heart mind. It is a realization. And most of the things that we've been told are not, they're not a knowing thing. They are a belief. And with a belief, you have to shore it up all the time. A belief is not the same as knowing. A belief needs buttresses, and it needs bricks and mortar, and it needs re-examining every so often to see that it's still a belief, because it comes from the head mind.
Right.
What we're seeking, that oneness that we're trying to find, comes from that knowing, comes from within. And once you reach it, you then know it. And you know it for the rest of your life, and for all eternity, and for all infinity. You don't have to re-examine it. You don't have to take time out to see if you still believe in it. It is a knowing. And that knowing only comes from visiting yourself at your core. I mean, we have such a loud, such a noisy, such a demanding society at the moment that most people don't take time at all, even to be quiet, let alone to examine their spiritual values and their spiritual core. It's something that we've forgotten, and it's something that we have to get back to. We have to create space. We have to create time to examine what we are, to commune with the God within, to ask the questions that are being asked tonight. And in doing that, the answers come. But they can't come if we don't make time for them,
right.
If we don't make space for them. Mm-hmm. And if we ask someone else, I can have my opinion, you can have your opinion, Maria, but those are just opinions until you have actually visited your core and taken them on board as knowledge, as knowing.
Right.
And then you don't ask the questions anymore.
Right, right. Well, I always tell people the word lie is in the word belief. And then, you know, it goes back to the power of words, because when I do counsel people and they need things or want things in their lives, I say, well, when you're communicating what all that is, don't use the word need or want, because they'll bring you more of the same. You have to be careful of your words, and using the word desire or require is certainly a lot better than saying I need or I want.
Yes.
So words are important, and we look at this world where people are forgetting even how to spell because everything is texting and chasing Pokemon. It's kind of sad because language and words is all related to numbers, and it makes a difference in how we project ourselves out there.
Yes, yes. We're being pulled into a world of, as you say, text and quick bites of information. And we don't realize that technology is in the hands of the field. Now, that sounds very conspiratorial, but it is. It's technology in itself is not a bad thing. But the way that we use it increasingly is, because we are immersing ourselves constantly in this barrage of information that doesn't leave us time to think, to breathe, to feel the pulse of God within us and to examine the pulse of God within us. As I think I've said before on this show, we live opposite a bus stop, and buses come by, and there are double-deckers, of course, as we have in the UK. And on each deck, you've got people who, no matter what time of day or night, are immersed in their tablets or their mobile phones.
Mm-hmm.
And from getting up to going to bed, that is their world.
Right.
The illusion that we've created now has an illusion within it, wrapped within it. So we have two illusions to deal with. And a lot of young people have two illusions to deal with. There should be a time, but there isn't a time, when young people say, I'm not going to go on my phone for an hour or a couple of hours.
Right.
I'm going to be quiet. We have to get back to being quiet, to discover our potential and who we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in Joseph's books, he talks about the expression God is, period.
Yes.
Now, every time I look at that, and, you know, like I said a million times, in case anybody gets offended out there, God can be whatever you believe it is, okay?
Yes.
But I also know one of the more powerful statements we can make as human beings is, I am. So what I do when something crazy is happening during the day, all of a sudden I feel like somebody shot an arrow at me and there's no arrow. I will say to myself a few times in my head or out loud, God is, I am. And it kind of makes that situation go away. So it's like a quick little mantra. I use it as a quick little mantra. God is, I am.
Yes, we are acknowledging the God in the situation. We're acknowledging the God in ourselves. We are resetting the situation. And it takes us out of the situation. And it takes us into the best possible situation because we are immersed in God love, God positivity, and God creativity. So yes, and it's wonderful that you say that. I wonder how many people during the day actually consider God. The missing equation in the world at the moment is God knowledge or knowledge of God. And there must be millions of people who get up in the morning and work through the day and go to bed at night and never have one God thought or one thought for God. And as you've said, the God is resets the equation. And it would be wonderful if people started to examine that possibility of being a part of God. We have become, despite our religions, a godless society. And that is very sad, because in being godless, we then focus on the material and look to the material to be the bringer of our joy, the bringer of our comfort, the bringer of solutions to our problems. And it never can be. It right. never can be. We can't find solutions in heavy matter. We have to find solutions in connecting to what we are. Lighter matter, God matter, and God matters. So a plea if someone out there doesn't think of God in a day, take some time just to consider God, just to welcome God in. Just to revisit the God that is within you and see what a difference that makes to your life and to the lives of the people whose lives you touch.
Exactly. Well, you know, if people can remember, and we should hyphenate remember, that they are God. You know, I think about the flack John Lennon got for saying something similar, or David Icke for saying he was God, and people really thought he was a heretic. But when you really realize you are God, you are a creative force. You create your life from the minute you wake up till the minute you go to sleep. You create your whole day. You create your reaction to people around them, your living space, et cetera, et cetera. It gives you a different perspective. And I think that when you forget, that's when you get really upset, angry, depressed, because you get trapped in the illusion of this reality and you get sucked right in.
Yes. And the illusion is powerful, particularly if we only spend our time thinking from the head mind. Because the head mind, as a computer, because that's what it really is connected to all the other computers around the globe. David, again, a member of the Band of Light, our fourth member of the Band of Light, always maintains that the weather is fine until people get up and start going to work, and it changes. And I do believe he's right.
Right.
If you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you can have a beautiful day. As soon as people get up and say, it's Monday again, or I've got to go to work again, en masse, so that thought is being multiplied by thousands, millions of minds, the weather changes. I mean, we've had ups and downs politically here over the last few months, and this has been the worst summer that I can remember.
Well, here too. All right. Here too. It's been wild and wicked with freak storms. I mean, Phoenix got flooded out last night. Georgia, you know, some town in Maryland. I mean, and I look at the weather events knowing that A, geoengineering happens, so who knows how much of it's created. But I also look at these very big negative events that happen in particular states in the Union. where hatred is at the top of the list, where they're passing horrific laws against women, against gay people, what bathroom you can go to, whatever. And then, boom, you have these massive freak storms or whatever happens there. And those are the same people that claim to be religious, blame everything that happens on to other people on God, but never make the connection when it's happening to them. Then what they put out is what they get back.
And also blame God himself, don't they?
Well, yeah.
God. Why did God let this happen? Why did God make this happen? Which is even worse than why did God let this happen?
Right.
And of course, he didn't. We created it. We injure the planet by our thoughts. We injure the planet by our actions because we are depleting the planet because we don't care for the planet. But we also injure the planet by our thoughts. We are intrinsically linked to the planet because the planet is also a part of God. The planet is also alive. And the planet is also part of us. And so we affect it by our thoughts.
Mm.
And when we're negative, when we're violent, when we're disruptive, we disrupt the Earth's core. We disrupt the mantle of the Earth. We disrupt the atmosphere. We disrupt the clouds. And then we wonder, as you said, why things have happened. And we blame others and we blame God.
Right.
But we want things...
I know. It's like...
calm down.
Every now and then you see memes going around on social media where, you know, they say, you know, they'll list places that have had, you know, a ton of natural disaster or shootings or whatever. And they'll say, you know, instead of praying, you know, to God after the event, why didn't you pray to make sure the event didn't happen?
Yeah.
You know, but humans are pretty strange that way. Michael, we're going to take a short break. Stay with us. Michael and I will be right back.
Spiritual professor is a name some of Maria's students and clients refer to her as. After a consultation or class with Maria, some have gone as far as calling her the Force or the Oracle. Maria is simply a woman, a mother, and grandmother who was born with a keen natural intuition. She's got a lot of life experience and she's a constant student herself. This is what qualifies her to help those who are on their journey and need some direction. Some students visit her in person, others on the phone or on Skype. Maria will work with you on your own timeline, guiding you down your best possible path. You can learn to balance the mind, body, and spirit in what seems to be a world gone mad. As David Icke says about Maria, Maria's the real deal, extremely intuitive but with her feet firmly on the ground, out there, but down here, no bullshit. Whatever you need in this part of your journey is what Maria will help you with. She'll give you the tools you need to make the rest of your life the best of your life. See private consultations with Maria on the site at meria.net and pick the one that resonates with you. You are not alone. The professor is in at meria.net. Now back to the show.
Okay, welcome back to The Bigger Picture with myself and Michael Reed. From Here to Eternity, his latest book, get over to josephspeaks.com. Use your intuition to pick out which book you should start reading, and then make sure you read all six. During the break, I told you, Michael, I can't tell you how many clients and how many students I've recommended your books to. I find that a lot of people that are out there freaking out over the world situation, it's mostly because they don't have any spiritual understanding. They don't have any spiritual knowledge. And I tell them that, listen, this is like the only author that I honestly can't critique the truth that's in his books. And you need to start with these books. And a lot of people will write me back and say how delighted they are that they did follow that and get your books and start reading them. Because here we have a situation where so many people are dying, so many people committing suicide, so many people afraid of dying. I thought we would talk a little bit about that, about physical death. What is physical death? because I think it's the ultimate unknown for people, and that could be why they're so afraid to die. But I'm sure you've met plenty of people, Michael, who are so afraid to die that they never fully live.
Absolutely, absolutely. But the first the point about dying, again, back to Joan, who once went to a spiritual healer, who was a medium who gave over his body in trance for 12 hours at a time, so that the spirit who was working through him could heal people. And at the end of the session with Joan, he said, have you anything you'd like to ask? And she said, well, yes, actually. What's it like to die? And he sort of did a double take and said, well, that's not usually what people ask. That's a very good question. And he said, I can only tell you what it was like for me to die. And he said that he woke up one morning and thought, oh, I feel fine. I really would like a cup of tea. And a cup of tea appeared in his hands. And he began to drink the tea, and about halfway down the cup, he thought, oh. And at that point, he saw his brother come through the wall and come towards him. Mm-hmm. And he said, come with me. And he said, but I must be in a terrible state if I've died. What's the cleaning lady going to think?
Oh.
She'll come in and she'll find me dead.
All right.
And his brother said, that is now not your concern. You've left that body behind. Come with me. And off he went. And there's a great deal more to this particular story. But the point is, it was as simple as that to die.
Right.
It was as though one breath was on this level, the next breath was on the next level. And he hadn't, the situation was so smooth, he hadn't even realized it.
Of course.
And he'd conjured up, using his spiritual capabilities without thinking, a cup of tea.
Right.
And it was only when he thought, this shouldn't be happening, I shouldn't be able to summon up a cup of tea, that he realized that he'd gone. So nothing to be afraid of. Nothing to be afraid of.
Right. Well, you know, that reminds...
Right, that a lot of people... Right. Sorry, after you, Marie.
No, that reminds me of that movie with Robin Williams, What Dreams May Come.
Oh, yes, a wonderful film.
Especially where he's sitting with Cuba Gooding, and Cuba Gooding is sitting with him and said, well, you know, what's your problem, you know? You just died. That doesn't mean you're not still alive. And he says, you know, if you want a cup of coffee, they're sitting at a little table. He said, just imagine a cup of coffee. You know, so it's exactly what you were saying. But you know what? That is a question when you say, you know, what's it like to die? You brought me back in time when my mother was dying, probably the last week of her life. We were all together and we took turns sleeping in the same room with her at night. And I remember one night in the middle of the night, I hear my mother's voice and she just says to me, because it was just the two of us, and she actually asked me that exact question. She just said, what's it like to die? And I said to her, I haven't died yet in this lifetime, but I remember dying in past lives, so I can share that with you. But I also had told her that probably for a month or two before she passed, she was already coming to me in dreams as a young, healthy woman. And I told her, you know, Ma, I've already seen you on the other side. Your body's not racked with this cancer. You're young, you're beautiful, you're healthy, you're happy. And she said, I knew you were the one to ask. And then she went back to sleep.
Yes. That's odd. That's an odd coincidence, Maria, because I have a past life memory of dying.
I think you and I are the same person
actually,
sometimes.
I think I've mentioned it on the show before, but briefly, I was with my wife and with three children, and there was a thunderstorm, and we were in a carriage going towards a town. We were in Germany, and the horses were spooked by a bolt of lightning, and we went down the side of a cliff. Through a wooded area, and I remember distinctly standing up, and my wife stood up, and the children stood up, and we looked back at our bodies and said, oh, and then off we went. Such a traumatic event, but not, in effect, the moment of passing. The moment of passing was very peaceful, and it was over with before we'd realized what had happened.
Exactly. And that story is very common. A lot of people who, you know, have had near-death experiences will come back with stories like that, or out-of-body experiences. But, you know, because I've done the work for so many years, God, I've had so many past lives that I've, you know, re-entered and checked out. It's almost like I do a constant life review without the benefit of being dead. But when you look at it, you understand that death is just another form of birthing yourself, except you're birthing yourself back into your spiritual self, and you're free of this planet. People are so attached to this planet and this madness, right? But they don't get, that's your ticket out of here. You know how many people say, well, now he's at rest, or now he's at peace.
Yeah.
And people do question, then how come we can't live in peace? Why do we have to die to have peace?
Well, of course we can live in peace, but we have to put some effort in. We have a terrible society that seems to think that everything is somebody else's responsibility. Mm. You know, make me well, sort me out, feed me, clothe me, get me the money. But it ultimately, because we're God, because we're part of God, the responsibility for every aspect of our lives is down to us. And that more peaceful world that we want is our responsibility too. And again, we've been fed information that suggests we are at the mercy of politics, at the mercy of armies, at the mercy of movements and thoughts and companies. But we are as powerful as any other human being on this earth. We're more powerful if we're giving out the light. Mm-hmm. But we have to do it. And we talked this evening about how do we connect with God. Well, we have to do it. Nobody's going to do it for us. And one of the greatest lessons we have in this life is personal responsibility, to learn personal responsibility, bit by bit, to discover that we're in control of our own universe.
Right.
And that we can contribute positively to this world. But we have to make a pact with God and do it. And if enough of us do it, the world changes.
Right. Well, what I've done, it's almost like a little game I play with myself, Michael, thanks to your books. So I'll share it with you. It's not the kind of stuff you want to tell just anybody, because I'd end up in a loony bin, I'm sure. But when you look at the fact that this body we're living in is our little avatar to be in this particular computer game, that's how I look at it. And that my master soul is puppeting this little body, this little Maria Heller, through this life. Sometimes what I like to do is I like to step outside myself and look at myself wherever I am. In other words, project myself above myself, my consciousness. Even if I'm at the gym, I'm sitting on the bike, I'll just do it for fun, okay? I'll say, okay, let me look at myself from a different perspective, from a bird's eye view. And there you see, you know, that little body, you know, pedaling away. She's listening to, her music and whatnot. But I think separating and looking at yourself from your higher self perspective gives you a reality check of just how small and I hate to say it, non-important life is on this planet. It's just a ride. And it's kind of fun. You know, I do that sometimes when I'm in bed. I'll say, okay, let me project and re-look at myself and watch the movie of my day. And you can, I'm sure you can do the same thing to project tomorrow the same way.
Yes, yes. I think what you said is also interesting, because it is just a ride. And that's what originally this planet was meant to be, as indeed all life experiences on all planets and in all universes is meant to be just a ride that adds to our perspective and takes that added perspective back to the Godhead. The problem here is that we're stuck in the ride. We're stuck in the groove.
Mm-hmm.
It's like being in a fairground and not being able to get out.
Right.
And we have to change that ride. And you're quite right that you can step away from yourself and see that aspect of yourself for what it truly is, which is only a temporary suit of clothes for part of your soul, so that you can learn, so that you can grow. But we have to change that ride. We have to get off the ride. We have to get off the ride, and we get off the ride by imagining, as you've said, a different tomorrow, a better tomorrow, a different ride.
Mm-hmm.
And we're stuck in the girls' train.
Well, I think we're stuck in the Casa Loco.
When I was
a kid, there was a ride at a place that's probably defunct now, Freedomland in New Jersey. And the ride was basically a house they called Casa Loco. The floors were uneven. It had distorted mirrors. Like when you went in, your entire equilibrium was thrown off balance. I would say that you can choose to wake up every day and spend all day in Casa Loco, or you can choose the merry-go-round or a pleasant ride. You know, what about the Tunnel of Love instead?
Yes.
But it really is how you look at it. And I don't think people need to become, you know, split personalities to realize the separation of, let me get this straight. This is just my avatar playing in this game.
Yes.
And if kids can go traveling around the world running after Pokemon, which doesn't exist, in a make-believe reality on their gadgets, they can should be able to make the easy connection that this reality is no different than the, you know, virtual reality game they're playing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And to spend time, rather than having a dialogue with their mobile phone or their tablet, to have a dialogue with God, to have a dialogue with their greater self, and to invite their greater self and to invite God into every aspect of their day, and to say, come on, God, we're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do this? God, I'm going to do this, and I'm not certain how to do it, but you know how to do it, so thank you very much. Off we go.
Right.
And to invite God in, to invite that higher vibration in, and to be to get used to working with it, which so many people, unfortunately, don't. And
well,
it is off the right.
Well, but people also have to understand there's an energy on this planet that's deliberately keeping people in the dark, and people are willingly going along with it through hatred, through violence, through prejudice, through judgment. So they really choose to be stuck in this particular reality, virtual reality. Because I know when some of my friends or students are freaking out and they'll call me, the first thing I say to them is, you're stuck in the Matrix. What happened to make you get pulled back into the Matrix and toss all of your spiritual knowledge to get yourself this upset? And I think sometimes just letting them know that they reverted to believing this reality is what makes the difference.
Yes, yes, yes. So look at the world differently, and change your mind. If we could keep a message out tonight, it would be change your mind. Change the way that you think, but also change the mind that you're using. Remember that you have a heart mind. Remember that you have a core mind that is your true spiritual mind. That's not connected to this world at all. It's connected to you as an angelic being. But in order to use that mind, you have to consciously reconnect to it. So take some time out each day to change your mind from the head mind to the heart mind and think heartfelt thoughts. Think thoughts from the core. Think thoughts from the Godhead. Think thoughts from your greater self.
All right.
And change this ride.
Right. You know, yesterday I had one of my friends come by who hates his job, who said all summer he would quit his job and find a better job. Didn't do it. Went back to the same job. He's only on the job 2 days. And he showed up and he says, I'm back on the job. I hate my job. And I looked at him and I said, you opted. You had an opportunity to change it, but you opted not to. So put on a happy face. I started singing, put on a happy face, for two reasons. Number one, I don't want to hear it, okay? Because I'm a person, if there's something in my life that I don't like, I don't just talk about it. I slaughter it out of my life. But if you've made a decision, then find a way to be happy with that decision.
Yes.
So, you know, the guy that invented that little yellow smiling face, who probably made millions of dollars, had the right idea. All it is a little smile, but how many people became consumed with it? Okay, everybody was buying anything that had that little smiley face on it.
Yes.
So maybe everybody should just tattoo a smiley face on their hands so they can remember that we're here to enjoy life, to enjoy the beauty of this planet, but somewhere along the way, everybody's got flipped over upside down into fear, 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 and just abusing the planet, as you said earlier, and losing their connection with nature. Okay, everything about nature screams abundance, and yet humans have forgotten they're part of nature, so they're also entitled to the same abundance.
Yes, and to appreciate that nature, and to nurture that nature, and to respect that nature, and respect the other forms of life that we have on this planet, and the planet itself, and to acknowledge that they, too, are an equal part of creation and an equal part of God. Not to think that we are the most important aspect of life on this planet. That simply isn't true. Everything is equally important. And there are species disappearing daily.
Right.
And that is a terrible state of affairs because the eco-balance is changing. And we are each dependent on the other. So we have to respect all forms of life. From a lion, a tiger, to a leaf, to a worm, everything has to be respected and loved because it is part of us and part of God.
I know.
And part of this balance that we find ourselves in.
Exactly. Well, I had one of my friends stop by last week, and because we've had so much rain, we have so many bugs, okay, especially these little black gnats that you can't see them, but they'll suck your blood all day long. And she was bitching to me about the insects, and I said to her, but we need the insects. Without the insects, we'd all be dead.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's just reminding. I think people should also hyphenate the word remind. You have to remind people that, we're using up the planet's resources at an unprecedented rate. Between overpopulation, I had a report yesterday that said that in the past 40 years, human consumption of the planet's resources tripled. So if there's no love for the planet we live on, it makes it difficult for people to love the body they live in.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And there's immense love for the next thing. And the next thing can never bring us happiness.
Right.
The next thing is not what we're about. They are only temporary constructs, and they can never bring us the happiness that reconnecting with nature, reconnecting with the planet, and reconnecting with God can. That's our true way to happiness, because that's what we truly are at core, and that's what we need, as you said, reminding of, remembering.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, I was going to ask you, what are you working on now? Can we look forward to another book, or are you taking a break from that?
No, I finally, Joseph has been, for the past 2 years, has been sort of, I don't want to say hovering, because he doesn't hover. There's a permanent connection with him. And whenever I've thought of the books, I know that there's another book. So we're working on three projects at the moment. We're just finishing the audio version of Your Life After Death. So I'm just checking through that for sound levels and things like that. So that should be out within the next 2 months.
Great.
Jane's transcribing the book from our guides who are connected to Joseph. So that's a book of lectures and addresses that we've been given by guides. And we've decided that in January we will sit for the seventh book.
Ah, wonderful.
So there will be another book, God willing, if I don't fall off a twig in the meantime.
Don't fall off without me. Sometimes there's so many similarities. I said, wow, maybe you're like the same person, but a nicer version of myself. A tamer Italian. Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining me, and I'll see you again in 2 months.
Always a great pleasure. Pleasure, Maria. You take care of yourself.
You
God bless
too.
You.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Michael Rakia. Check out josephspeaks.com. And he mentioned Your Life After Death. That's still my favorite one of his books. I wouldn't mind rereading it in between everything else I'm reading. Anyway, tonight I'm going to be a guest on Chuck Ocelli's show. So you're going to want to tune in to the Ocelli Effect, even though I always call it the Ocelli Factor. I don't know why. So that's at 5 p.m. Pacific, and that means 8 p.m. Eastern. So who knows what Chuck and I will have to say. And tomorrow I'll be back with the news. Friday, Stars Are Us. Stay tuned. Thank you for supporting the show. See you guys then.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.